I will simply say we are now beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 111D in the decanate tabulations on the clockwise wheel. Now, remembering here that I have somewhat reversed things, what I have done is I've written in green concerning the clockwise wheel, and now I'm going to be writing in blue concerning the counterclockwise wheel. And I've sort of reversed an earlier position that I took as I thought about it more deeply, you know. At first I followed DK when he said that the Moon, Venus, Mercury, and Saturn are the rulers, but the order in which they should be placed, I think, is Saturn, first decanate, Mercury, second decanate, and Moon, Venus, third decanate. Moon on the clockwise wheel and Venus on the counterclockwise wheel, even though that does not fit with the Hindu system of rulers, which also has, I think, some value. It's a very complicated area we're into here, but observation will help. Now, here in blue, I've put Saturn, Mercury, Venus, but this time we are moving in the counterclockwise direction, and we've reached the stage where you are not only an integrated personality, but you are an integrated personality which is beginning to aspire, not just the selfishly integrated personality. So there is still some Venus in this, but we're under Vulcan to an extent, which is the esoteric ruler, which is under Vulcan, which is the esoteric ruler with soul influence, with soul influence, and the influence of Venus, at least in a specific sense, is slowly growing as the ruler of the solar angel. So we are integrating the personality, we are aspiring, Venus is still strong, and Vulcan is beginning to come in. Under Vulcan, which is the esoteric ruler, growing stronger. With soul influence, of Venus slowly growing as well, but not in the exoteric sense, because now Venus the solar angel and not Venus as desire. The second quality for the advancing man on page 332 of this book is not just the light of earth, but it's the light of love, aspiration and the light of love. And I'll show this to you. This is page 332, and here we have Taurus, aspiration, and the light of love. Obviously, Venus really continues throughout the entire thing because Venus brings about the release of the implanted consciousness into its full soul nature and its rising into still higher nature. So I want to say this, and maybe say it in blue. This way, we are never rid of Venus as it represents the liberating solar angel which Taurus so much needs. And now I will put it in blue, actually, because we're in the area of the reversing wheel. And of course, I think I should have done that for all of them. It would have been even clearer. Well, now we're not starting over here at the 30 to 20 degrees. We're starting at 0 to 10 degrees, which we have said from the psycho-spiritual perspective can be hypothesized as ruled by Saturn. So we have been blind. The bull rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs. We're slowly recovering our sight through the restraining of the lower threefold nature. In other words, we are directing lower energy towards the opening of the single eye, which Taurus represents. So, and this is a higher type of struggle. So if we discipline ourselves, restrain our lower energies, do not dissipate all energies in instinctual satisfactions and so forth, there will be a movement towards sight. So this is, again, the Eridanus decanate. Or maybe we're kind of reversing the direction of the river. River Eridanus. And we are not becoming so much the soul incarnation as the soul that is learning to leave incarnation. We are, in fact, aspiring. There is a lot about Mercury and Venus that gives aspiration, or at least a magnetism towards the higher life. Now it's Mercury, and it's not just negotiating intelligently the lower worlds. The intelligent mind becomes aware of higher things. There is aspiration and longing for the chariot to leave the planes of earth. I'm carrying on this kind of metaphor here. The chariot is driven by a combination of personality and soul, because we are still the aspirant. We're not yet the disciple. The chariot is the rapidly integrating personality, increasingly under soul inspiration. I guess I want to make that blue also. I like blue, and it kind of carries forth the intention. So, you know, I would say flashes of intuition are occurring. Now we get into the Venus decanate. Now Venus, as I said, is not as advanced a planet as is Mercury, but it does, for the Earth, represent a very great power. Venus itself is as the soul to the Earth, and the solar angel, of course, informs the what we call the soul for the human being. And as we are rising, even through the triad and monad, we are coming closer to Venus. As a matter of fact, I think that if as monads we took the path to Sirius, which the bulk of humanity will do, we would stop first on the planet Venus for training before we left our solar system. So we go on into the Orion decanate, sensing the light of the soul, ruled by Venus, and aspiring towards its light, and we are realizing the limitations of incarnated life and strongly attracted to the beauty of the soul. I'm just adding a few things in here, and you can elaborate and upon these yourself as well. So we reach the stage where the aspirant is found, and it's not selfish personality integration. It's a higher type of personality integration under the influence of the soul in general. Venus is always getting stronger, but Vulcan, it takes a lot of Vulcan and spiritual will to go to reverse the wheel and steadfastly hold to that reversal. And that's another thing that Saturn will give. Vulcan will give it. And let's just say, let's see here. Yeah. Steadfast holding to the reversal under Saturn. Under Saturn. Okay. Now we come to the phase where many of us are trying to live, the discipleship phase. Now we cannot really say that Venus will get weaker simply because it's the orthodox ruler, because the soul must always get stronger, and Venus will always be the best symbol for the soul, especially for the Taurian individual. But so this is the discipleship soul phase under Vulcan, with, as esoteric ruler, with soul influence of Venus becoming powerful. Well, it's under Vulcan, I should forget this with, I guess, as esoteric ruler, with soul influence of Venus becoming powerful. Not the lower desire, but the will is getting stronger and stronger, and we do know that to be a disciple, the will has really to be cultivated, the will working with the mind. We have mentally directed aspiration. Mercury is powerful there, and the growth of illumined living due to spiritual will. We're living in the light of love and sending and sensing, I guess I didn't proofread this very well in the old days, sensing the light of life, which is the third type of light. We see here on page 332, illumined living the light of life under the spiritual will. Okay, let's see, let's get that. And there we go. Okay, so this is, now under Saturn, we're living in the illumination revealed by the soul, both the light of mind and the light of love, but we're following the law. We're realizing that by following the law under Saturn, entailing struggle, this will reveal the light and love of the soul nature. So we are under Saturn. We are disciplining ourselves to be to live as souls. Now remember, Venus will have something to do with this first decanate, and later we can look at that more completely. But this is the Saturn decanate. The Mercury decanate here from 10 to 20, the very intelligent mind, remember how intelligent and light-filled Taurus can be, willfully, because it's driven by Vulcan, pursues the higher love and the higher light. The chariot, which is the vehicle, is driven by the soul, Krishna the soul, and travels now and then to the land of the soul and rapidly. Let me make this again. I'd like to make that blue. Rapidly to the land of the soul, and rapidly so. The chariot is the soul-infused personality, increasingly. Three phases of that soul infusion occurring. And occasionally, the consciousness of the soul. I must have done this quickly for a class at some point, and only now, years later, am proofreading it and revising as I go. So, you know, the intuition will be coming in from abstract mind of Mercury to the intuition of Mercury demonstrating itself, but not as fully as in the initiatic life. And then living the light of the soul illumined mind. This is the Venus section. We're not going to call it Moon anymore, are we? Even though Moon and Venus are, in a sense, the same, we found that the Moon represented intelligence in matter, and Venus represented the higher mind, intelligence on the soul level. Living the light of the soul illumined mind and using the will, Vulcan, to sustain that illumination. So, you see, I'm never really getting rid of Venus in discussing this, because Venus, even though it's such an Orthodox ruler of Taurus, is sustained throughout Taurus just the way, I would say, that Jupiter, as the Orthodox ruler of Sagittarius, is sustained throughout Sagittarius. After all, these are very high sacred planets. They give way, in a sense, to non-sacred planets, which are said to be the esoteric and hierarchical rulers, but still they somehow sustain themselves. So we are detaching from incarnated life in the increasingly realized glory of the soul. It's not constant, it's not initiatic living yet, but it is on its way. And so, you know, there is a glory that Venus represents. And it seems to me that in the last decanate of Taurus, that glory should be demonstrated just as it is demonstrated in the last decanate of Capricorn, ruled by Mercury, Vulcan, Sun together. And hence, Venus would be a very fitting ruler to demonstrate that type of glory. We don't just end in struggle, we end in triumph. So Venus, for man, represents the triumph of the solar angel. The man becomes the angel in a lower sense. He is glorified. And if you think about the glorification that occurred at the Transfiguration, it is a Venus phenomenon. The third degree is ruled by the fifth ray and by Venus. And that glorification has to do with the beauty in the light involving the higher self or Venus. And of course, the spirit gets into the act as well, with the Sun and Vulcan really being in a way veiled by Mercury in the third decanate of Capricorn. Well, so that's the soul, a disciplic phase. Vulcan is making the spiritual will stronger and stronger all the time. And the Venus influence continues until the fourth initiation. We have to put that down here. In general, generically, remember that the Venus influence continues until the fourth initiation is taken. And then, and only then gives way to something still higher. All right, now finally, the initiatic phase. And let's see how we're doing here in time. Okay, the initiatic and monadic phase. Well, we're Vulcan again is the hierarchical ruler. So Vulcan as the hierarchical ruler with soul influence of Venus arriving at fulfillment or fulfilled. Living in full soul radiance, not yet perhaps, well, eventually the radiance of the spirit, but living in full soul radiance with the growing, within the growing light of life. Will is applied to achieve illumination. So it's the illumination not only of the soul, but intensified by the presence of spirit conveying the light of life. This is a high phase, and you know, when you look at someone like the Buddha, well, of course, he had this totally. The greatest demonstration of it, he was the monad, he was a sixth-degree initiate at the time of his illumination. It's not the same illumination as we take. Krishnamurti, too, as a fourth-degree initiate, or one taking the fourth degree, had this great illumination, less than the Buddha's, of course. He was becoming an arhat, and the Buddha had surrounded himself by arhats, so they were his students achieving the full illumination that is possible in incarnation as one who is still a man and as one who still has a causal body. Once a fourth degree initiate, then no longer the causal body, and one has to live through that. So now again we have our Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. Not Saturn, Mercury, and the Moon. We're just using the Moon on the clockwise wheel, and I want to change the color here. Living in the full illumined nature of the spirit monad, the atmic will of God. Remember, Saturn is connected with Atma, and so is Vulcan, we have decided. Spiritual will comes from the atmic plane, maybe even more authentically from the logoic plane, but certainly from the atmic plane as the first expression of the monad on the still higher plane, the monadic plane. So spiritual will is both Vulcanian and Saturnian, and we're in the Saturn decanate here. The atmic will of God stands revealed, and I would say increasingly as the initiate becomes higher, well, becomes more elevated. Now we're in the Mercury phase, and the intuitive mind is illumined now by the spirit monad, or by the triad monad. first by the triad in the initiatic phase, and then by the monad in the high initiatic phase. The chariot is directed by the spirit and is driven above the three lower worlds. It rides in the air, the triadal streams liberated. I like this somehow. The spirit soul consciousness is the driver. And I want to add here, if I can, the chariot at a certain point may even be the Maya Virupa, meaning that if we're talking about a high enough initiate, we are past the fourth initiation, when the monad really prevails, and the chariot is not the chariot we began with at all, but the Maya Virupic chariot. Finally, under Venus, living in the light of the monad and willfully, that's Vulcan, sustaining the presence of that light. So detached from incarnated life, yes, and let's put it like this, living in glory and intensifying glory as the initiations proceed. So Vulcan, of course, is there. The spiritual will is very, very strong, but the spiritual will sustains the glorification. The glorification is under Venus. I mean, Venus is a planet of beauteous glory, and Vulcan is a planet of intense glory. So Venus, beauteous glory, and Vulcan, intense glory. And of course, Vulcan is also artistic in that sense, so there may be a kind of spirit beauty involved there. Venus is rarely associated with the spirit, per se, usually with the soul, and perhaps to a degree with the triad, as it is a very Buddhic planet. Vulcan is more associated with the spirit, and the most intense form of glory involves the glory of the soul and also the glory of the spirit simultaneously. And we are heading for the full illumination. Now, you know, not all of this is just beautifully and sequentially laid out. I suppose by studying here what I have put down, one can piece it together even more fully than I've been able to do. But I think we can see how we move in the clockwise direction towards the first decanate from the moon, not moon Venus so much, except as Venus is a submerged consciousness, which is lunar in nature. So we move from the moon to intelligence via Mercury and to struggle in Saturn, where we're struggling to detach and are experiencing karmic limitations. Then on the reversing wheel, which is going counterclockwise, we have the discipline that is needed in Taurus. We're never exactly given the decanate of Taurus in which the Buddha is born. Maybe in some of the astrology of the East that is given. You know, it would be interesting to see whether he was born in the Orion decanate or one of the other decanates, or the Mercury decanate, because the name of Mercury is Bud. Maybe he was born in the Mercury decanate. Somewhere that information exists. All we're given at the moment is the sign. And then we moved from the discipline of Taurus to the increasing availability or accessibility of the cosmic ethers and of intuition, and finally into the glorification, the sort of supernova that occurs at the fourth initiation, at which Venus is still ruling but then gives way to something still higher. Actually, in a way, gives way to Mercury, because the Buddhic plane becomes our focus and our home at that point. We are no longer simply accessing the Buddhic plane, we are actually focused on the Buddhic plane. So this is the sixfold, you know, as I do this. Of course, I realize the inadequacies of this presentation and also the ambiguities of it. You know, sometimes you don't know whether you're coming or going in both directions simultaneously. But by a close study of people, especially those who are increasingly soul-infused, by their achievements and the manner of their achievements and the quality that they demonstrated in these achievements, we will be able to link this information more precisely with everyday living, and it will become increasingly valuable to us. So here I've given you hints. I've consulted with my friends and colleagues over the years, Nicholas Nilan, Stephen Pugh, Philip Lindsay, David Keston, other fine astrologers who know in various ways a lot more about astrology than I do. I'm just trying to give this broad overview and sort of the metaphysical implications here. And I've tried to bring in their points of view and say where my present point of view may differ somewhat. It's all experimental and it's all speculative at this time as far as our human consciousness is concerned. When it comes to the consciousness of a master astrologer like Master DK, well, he just knows. And we are seeing through a glass darkly, but that darkness is dissipating and the glass is clarifying, and before long we'll be able to see things in an illuminated manner as they are. Now I guess it's time to go back to the text. So returning to text, after discussing the sixfold tabulation and all phases. Now, you do understand, don't you, that the far right column is all about the six stages through which every human being moves, whether they are in any sign, one sign or another. They move through a physical Lemurian stage. They move through an Atlantean emotional stage. They move through an early Aryan stage, if I can just get that to cooperate. The early Aryan stage, which is dealing with the lower mind and the focus of the lower personality around the lower mind, a very efficient mind and personality, but rather concrete and limited in the spiritual sense. And then moving through what I would call the higher Aryan stage, where aspiration takes over and the personality is increasingly integrated under aspiration for soul life. And we're still in the Aryan stage when we deal with discipleship and the soul, but perhaps we're moving a bit more into the stage which will be with us when we enter the sixth root race. Certainly in the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race, we're cultivating the abstract mind, which every disciple has to do, and eventually in the sixth root race itself, we cultivate the intuition. So let's put it like this, that when we deal with the initiatic monadic phase, we're certainly dealing with sixth root race consciousness where the intuition is alive and well. I don't think we're really moving into the seventh round, so to speak, but maybe the spiritual will be demonstrated in its completeness in the seventh round, and then people who have that spiritual will active and are working on the atmic plane will be called seventh rounders, perhaps. Right now, the master is a fifth rounder, and the Chohan is a sixth rounder, and those who have logoic consciousness are considered seventh rounders, and the Christ and the Buddha are learning to be that. So the Aryan race is correlating pretty much with mastership, the sixth root race with Chohanship, and the seventh root race with the seventh round and a higher type of Chohanship. So these last several phases, everybody passes through them, but pretty much we're going to stop at the fourth initiation and not talk about being a master. This initiatic monadic stage will, for practical purposes, stop at the fourth initiation. Although naturally it does continue, and to be a full monad you have to be a sixth degree initiate. Now meanwhile, every one of the signs has its method. Actually what I should do here, I should just say third decanate, I should call this moon. Moon, more than Venus. Moon, first decanate, include Venus, but in a lower and earthed expression. Okay. So it doesn't make a difference what sign we're talking about. They will all, people going through them will move from 30 to 20, 20 to 10, 10 to 0, and then reverse the wheel, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. Now, I have often stressed the fact that an initiate can be born in any decanate, a disciple can be born in any decanate, an aspirant can be born in any decanate, and unevolved man can be born in any decanate too. I do believe that a close study of actual births statistically undertaken will reveal this to be the case. But the decanates do have kind of a resonance with different stages of human development. So that in a way, the first decanate on the clockwise wheel resonates to Lemuria and physicality. The second decanate on the clockwise wheel relates to Atlantis and emotionality. The third decanate on the clockwise wheel relates to the early Aryan phase and concrete mentality. The first decanate on the counterclockwise wheel, or the reverse wheel, relates to a higher Aryan phase and the abstract mind starts to come in. The second decanate on the reversed wheel will relate to the disciplic stage and the intuition begins to be cultivated, and some of the kind of a harbinger of the sixth root race starts to come in. It's no longer strictly the Aryan phase, though largely the Aryan phase. And then by the time we get to the initiatic phase, it's a consummation of Aryanism with strong hints of the sixth root race coming in. We're beginning to be affected by the monad in that sort of a third decanate on the counterclockwise wheel. Now, that's sort of the archetypal form of it all, but what you have to remember is that when it really works out in practical life, anybody can be born anywhere and has to use, as I've tried to show here, the potency of the particular decanate in a way which suits the developmental level at which he finds himself. So, you know, let's just say, okay, if I'm born in the second decanate of Aries, which I am, and I'm striving to be a soul, then I would use the potentials of that decanate, the Leo, the Sun part, to achieve some degree of soul illumination and so forth. But I could be the undeveloped man, I could be simply a personality, I could be born in the second decanate, and there I would have a much more egotistical approach to the use of those second decanate energies. And I would be subjected to Cassiopeia rather than learning to achieve freedom from Cassiopeia, which is the queen of the heavens. All right, so that gives some idea, I think, and you know, it is my great wish that I suppose I could go back over things, you know, and when I dealt with Aries, Pisces, Aquarius, and so forth, I was not doing the full reading of all of the decanates in the earlier stages, in the clockwise stages. I said, well, you don't need that because you're pretty much beyond the clockwise stage, so let's just start with the stage of aspiration. But I think I may have left something out. But if you've gotten this far in these lessons, then you'll know enough to go back and do it for yourself and find a way, because after all, the tabulations are there. All you have to do is freeze the screen and you've got whatever is there. So the things that I've written may be as signposts, even though I did not stop to explain them completely. I mean, the science of astrology is super, super vast, and we just know peanuts about it. But okay, it is expanding our sense of the interrelation of all things. So there's much to be worked out, and by yourself as well. Just the way I'm trying to do. You know, I've read this book for a long time. I remember when I got my first copy of Esoteric Astrology. Probably I should have bought it new. I was in the Gnostica bookstore. Is that it? Gnostica bookstore in Minneapolis. It's one of those seventh-ray magical places that was painted purple at the time. It was probably in the late 60s or early 70s, you know, more than 40 years ago. And I saw this, I still almost can relive the moment when I reached for that book and I pulled out Esoteric Astrology with all kinds of pencil scrawls all over the thing by someone who stopped reading after just, I don't know, 40 or 50 pages, didn't get very far, you know. And, you know, the curse was on it already, you know, you can't get very far in this book. But what I did was I used that book and I used it up until it just fell apart. I still have that copy of that astrology book somewhere in its fallen apart stage. There was a time Keith Bailey and I knew very well the last remaining disciple of the discipleship group. She was Marian Walters, and we each received certain things from her when she passed on. And I received a bunch of her books. And I talk about falling apart. I mean, they just were super marked up and literally coming apart at the seams. So anybody who inherits my books, although I've stopped using books for a while, now I pretty much do it electronically now. I don't want to be bothered writing down things in books. I want to do it in a faster way, you know. We'll receive cosmic fire in pieces and esoteric astrology in fragments. That's how they are. They're just bursting at the seams. I wish my knowledge were bursting at the seams, but okay, it is what it is. And for all of us, we are where we're at and doing what we're doing, and we will succeed and we will move on. So now I want to just say a little bit more in the Taurus chapter. It says, keynotes of this sign are, as usual, clear in their implications. One states the note of the form aspect. And remember, the soul enunciates this key note. Let's see how many. Oh, well, we have some pages to go here. I wonder if I'll finish here. One states the note of the form aspect, spoken by the soul, let struggle be undismayed. Well, undismayed is a funny word. If you are dismayed, you are confused, you are thrown into a condition where you don't know, you're shocked, you don't know why something has happened. It's almost to say, just accept the struggle. This is what I think it says. Accept the struggle. And get on with the struggle, because it will not stop any time soon. The word of the form is to take, grasp, and go courageously after that which is desired, because in doing that we begin to put the world back together, don't we? The world has been divided into many pieces, and through desire we begin to reunite it, as blind as our desire may be in the beginning. The word of the soul is, I see, and when the eye is opened, all is light. We have to go from two horns and two eyes to the one horn of the unicorn and the single eye, which Taurus at least represents. It doesn't yet represent the unicorn horn, but, you know, you can imagine the horns coming together at the top and making a great sphere of light, which is the third eye. The eye of the cosmic bull, let's call it Aldebaran for the moment, the eye of the cosmic bull of God is open. And each one of us as an initiate or a cyclops or a one-eyed man has to have this one eye open, the eye of God, the Shiva eye within us, and from it light pours radiantly forth upon the sons of men. We not only acquire the unitive vision, but we are able to illumine the minds of others through this single eye and help them as well grasp the unitive vision, which should be in some really significant measure achieved by the third degree. That single eye is growing all the way from the time of the first initiation. I was shocked to read that when I first read it. From the time of the first initiation, it's forming, and by the time we have the third degree, the three points around the head have been unified, and this triangle of light between the Ajna, crown center, and Alta Major is functioning, and then the third eye is evoked into greater power and actual functionality. Conscious, willful functionality. The eye of vision of the individual man must likewise open in response to the cosmic light. You kind of wonder who's seeing through the cosmic eye of the bull. Is it the one about whom naught may be said is open? We might ask, is the one about whom seeing through the cosmic eye? I like being able to write O-A-W and get one about whom naught may be said out of it. Can you imagine the tedium of having to write one about whom naught may be said all the time? Okay, so, and it pours radiantly forth upon the sons of men, you know, illumining our whole solar system, illumining our planet, and illumining humanity as it comes closer and closer to the planetary logos on our planet. The eye of vision of the individual man, the eye of unitive vision, or which actually see clearly with the eye of vision, and you will see not two but one, right? It says in the fourth ray integration formula, the eye of vision of the individual man must likewise open in response to this cosmic light. That's where it all starts. You say, what opens the third eye of man? But it's cosmic light ultimately that's behind it all, even though we don't really sense this cosmic light directly. Hence, victory is inevitable. And I have to point out, you know, that Scorpio is not the only sign in which victory is achieved. Maybe all of them have their consummations, and you know how it is with the fourth ray. In the beginning, the agony of defeat and the paean of victory, these held him down. Even the paean, P-A-E-N, is that how it's spelled? Paean? P-A-E-N, something like that. The paean of victory, not pain, that's there too. The paean, the chant, the song, the victory song, these held him down. So victory is one of those dynamic factors which is very much involved with the fourth ray. And since these are two very powerful fourth ray constellations, victory is involved in both. Hence, victory is inevitable, for the potency of cosmic energy will unfailingly and in time subdue and reorient the energy of humanity. So we would say not just the, oh, why don't I type, just the light of the planetary logos or the solar logos, but the cosmic logos and the super cosmic logos, in which these signs of the zodiac or constellations of the zodiac play a role in the heart and the head center of this great supercosmic being. Oh, yes. Okay. I'd like to finish this all in this particular program, but I'm not sure I can. We have now considered briefly, and yet I believe instructively, indeed so, Master DK, certain of the subjective influences and significances of the 12 signs of the zodiac. He's going to wind up here in a way. We have touched upon their mutual interrelation and their planetary interplay, that is, how they relate to each other and how they relate to the various planets, and have sought to portray the reactions of humanity to these multiple energies and forces. Remember, when we're dealing with multiplicity, we're especially dealing with the third ray and all the many, many energy threads. And the third ray is the ray of the astrologer. Astrologers have to learn to deal with multiplicity. Those who deal with the rays alone, more on the secondary line, have not such a variation to confront. These forces pouring out from the cosmic sources find their way into our solar system, being attracted thereto through analogous quality. Or under the law of contradictions or the law of contraries, find their way to certain planets. This is interesting. The similarity of vibration on a lower level in a solar system may attract the great constellational forces, but under the law of contradictions, you know, and what would, or the law of contraries, how would we voice that in an easier way? We might say this way, opposites attract, might we say that? Under the law of contradictions or the law of contraries, find their way to certain planets. In a way, planets are contraries to the signs. Well, they are certainly on a lower turn of the spiral than the great constellations, but it seems to me that certain of the great constellational energies find their way to planets of a very different nature than that which they are. Thus, they affect the conditions, affect and condition units of life upon each of these receiving planets. Well, certainly the polarity is different. The polarity of the constellational lords is positive. The polarity relative to them of the lords of the planets is negative. And so they are the attracting agencies. We see man incited, that's a Taurian word, to progress by the nature of the forces of divine attraction, and have noted the differing divine qualities which this play of energies evokes in humanity. So it's not just imposition, it's not just the application, forceful application of an energy. Energies are invited. Harmonious energies, energies are calling forth and magnetizing energies which are harmonious or more identical with their own nature, but as well opposites attract. So we have seen in man incited to progress by the nature of the forces of divine attraction, and have noted the differing divine qualities which this play of energies evokes in humanity, because there's so much inherent within us that has to be called forth by the application and magnetic power of the super energies. We are drawn out of ourselves. All that is implicit in spirit and is deeply buried in matter or in lower consciousness is drawn forth by the play of these planetary, solar, and constellational energies, as well as in all other forms of life. So heaven acting upon earth draws forth the innate quality which is deeply immersed in earth until it can flower forth and demonstrate as that which it truly inherently is. We have perhaps emphasized almost to the point of bewilderment the vast aggregation of impelling energies. They are not only impelling, but they are attractive, which play throughout our cosmos. The quality of impulsion has to do with the first ray, and the quality of attraction with the second. So, yes, at first, bewildering. And how many years have we read this book? Well, you know, I've been reading it 40-some years with a crescendo, I hope, of understanding, I hope. And you know, just touching the surface. So there's this vast aggregation of so many energies not even mentioned, and the interplay not mentioned, so many triangles, and only a few selected for discussion, and yet they are all effective. It's getting dark here in Finland, and or at least rain is coming, and I see that I'm looking a bit like a floating head in the darkness, but okay, wait a second. Hold on. Okay, maybe that's a little better. No more the floating head in the darkness. We have perhaps emphasized almost to the point of bewilderment, well, I wouldn't say almost, I'd say at first to the point of bewilderment, and then hopefully clarifying, the vast aggregation of impelling energies which play throughout our cosmos. And it's pretty much our local cosmos, because we're not talking about galaxies beyond our own in any specific way. Individual man may well be stunned by a sense of his helplessness and his unique futility. And yet we're talking eventually about the seeing of the interplay of energies by the astonished disciple as he looks in amazement upon the heavens at the time of the third initiation, and somehow it can make sense out of at least the local interplay of many diverse energies. But this is only due to the relatively undeveloped state of his, that is, man's receiving apparatus. When thus bewildered, that means, lost in the forest of individual items that cannot be easily correlated yet, lost in the forest. When thus bewildered, let him remember that potentially he possesses the creative ability to build and gradually to develop a better mechanism of reception, which will enable him finally to be responsive to all the impacts into every type of divine energy, at least, I would say, within our local cosmosphere, within the one about whom. Now, obviously, the universe is so vast, the cosmos is so vast, that it can't be said that, well, we've located a galaxy hundreds of millions of light years away now, or billions of light years away, and we are responding to it. We're not there yet, but the greater beings will respond to those sources. And when we remember that our solar logos to some life sources is just as a crystal, how much can a crystal respond? It hasn't yet built itself up cosmically to being a more sophisticated responder. But anyway, we will become more responsive. That is for sure. We have to have faith in that. This capacity is indestructible, and is itself a divine focus of energy which must and will, without fail, carry forward the good undertaken under the inspiration of the great architect of the universe. Great architect of the universe, he is a third ray being. The architect is the third ray, and if you check that out in Esoteric Psychology 1, under the third ray, the names of the third ray lord, even though the third ray lord is very small, looked at universally, he is the great architect of the universe. So this capacity always to develop a better mechanism is on its way. And we are very fortunate in that, because the emergence of the good which the great universal logos intended is inevitable. So the great architect of the universe, he fashions all things to a divinely foreseen, we don't foresee it, but a divinely foreseen end. And in this sign, he's coming back to Taurus, through his agents, Venus and Vulcan, typifying the form and the soul, although you kind of wonder which is which, because in a way, Vulcan, in its relation to the moon, is the form and the soul is Venus. So each can be each, in a way. But Vulcan, in a way, has more relation to the form than even Venus does, will lead man from the unreal to the real. Lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality. The first two could very well be associated with Taurus. Wow, that's it, isn't it, friends? That is it. What kind of climaxing sentence does he have? Well, he sticks with Taurus pretty well. But we get the idea that the greatest of all the architects of the universe is shaping the entirety of the universe to an archetypal end, which is the very purpose for which the universal logos emerged from the ultimate one about whom not may be said, which is the absoluteness. And here on our very low level, we have some reflections of that emergence. Each one of us is going to be the embodiment of that which our own great architect envisioned and fashioned. And so it will be for the planet and the solar logos and the constellations and the arms of the galaxy and the galaxy and the family of galaxies and all. They will all be fashioned into the form which they are intended to take. I guess every universe has its own algorithm, its own secret code for what exactly is to unfold. And this is inherent in the mind or the consciousness of the emergent universal logos. And how he does it is the drama, is the dance, is the game, is the play. How he does it, because I don't think the path to doing it is laid out because of the principle of free will. So it's not all rigidly determined. Much is apparently learned along the way of this universal unfoldment. And yet you can wonder whether anything is learned after all, as perhaps the infinity of infinities has done all, even that which is apparently undone. Can there be anything it is not, and can there be any path taken that it has not taken and is not? Sometimes I think, no, that any possible action as any universe or within any universe has already been completely fulfilled forever in that absoluteness, infinite deity, whichever is exactly what it is. So, you know, it leads us beyond what the mind of a human being can fathom, and as I've thought, even beyond what the mind of a great logos can fathom, and even beyond what the mind of the universal logos can fathom, as it is, as is any definite quantity, and what I call an ultimate negligibility, the ultimate infinitesimal when compared with absoluteness. You know, I know I spin off here onto the third ray, and I try to solve some of the universal problems with some philosophical mathematics, and sometimes think I'm getting somewhere, but not always. Well, anyway, I'm glad to reach this point. This is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 111. Kind of interesting to finish the first half, D, and page 404, and beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 112, A, page 404, and it's really entering the science of triangles and the whole second part of the book. We have done more than one half of the book, and even if I should not be able to do any more of this book, which I trust will not be the case, then at least the introduction and the signs of the zodiac have been commented upon according to my present level of ignorance. I'm sure if I went back and looked closely at what I had said in various places, I would be pulling my hair out and say, oh, why did I say that? And why was I not more clear or perceptive or correlational in certain places? But time marches on, and I hope this has been of use to you, and I hope that what is going to be done next will also be of use to you, and we'll get this out to you as soon as possible. There must be 150 programs here. You know, I know it says 111, but some of them are multiple and so forth. Plenty to listen to, plenty to think about, and to advance in your own way, your own knowledge of esoteric astrology, and help it be your guide in the ageless wisdom. And speaking of that, I'd just like to close this program, which is the final in this part of the book, with the Great Invocation, the Point of Light Within, which, from a practical perspective, is our most powerful instrument in seeing to the coming of the reappearance of the Christ in his own good time, but at least preparing the way for him, our most powerful instrument. And after all, it's great to speculate about the cosmos and all the things that the energies can do and will do, but when it comes to what's happening here on the Earth, it's the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, which are our next movements of moment and will guarantee the progress of humanity and of the planet, and therefore the most essential. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure 112 and entering the science of triangles, the discussion of which looks like it's going to go on for 96 pages. So we end at 404, but begin at 4, well, I don't know, we'll have to see here where we begin. Let's go to 404 and Esoteric Astrology and just see where actually we do begin, because some of the pages may have been taken up with other things. Well, we are on 404, and then for some reason we begin on 407, and that's because in the actual printed version of the book, pages were taken up to divide one section from another. Okay, friends, farewell, and we'll see you soon. See you soon.